count.
Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2, Ruth Adelson and Hope Layton interviewing Clara Klein on January the 18th, 1996. Claire, would you please tell us your address?
My home address is 4737 Coleridge Street, that's C-O-L-E-R-I-D-G-E, and the zip code is 15201-1605.
Thank you. Claire, would you tell us something about your immediate family, your father, your mother, the siblings? Tell us something about your early life.
My father was a doctor here in Pittsburgh. He was born in Altoona, but they settled in Pittsburgh, and he was a physician here. As a matter of fact, he was honored as the oldest physician at St. Francis that was active after his 55 years of service. My mother was Annetta Marks Horwitz. She was a graduate of PCW, where I also lived. And she was extremely active in the Pittsburgh general community as well as the Jewish community. As a matter of fact, she was an active member of the Council of Jewish Women, her dad.
So, and what was your father's name?
My father was John J. Horwitz, H-O-R-W-I-T-Z. And my mother was Annetta Marks Horwitz. She came from original jewelers who settled in the city of Pittsburgh.
Right. But were your parents born in this
country? Both my parents were born in this country. I'm married to Seymour Klein, and our oldest son is Alan H. Klein, and our youngest son is Evan A. Klein, and we're very lucky that they both have settled in the city of Pittsburgh.
You are indeed lucky.
Alan was born when?
In 1950, and Evan was born in 1955.
How about brothers and sisters?
I have one brother who is a retired physician. His name is Lloyd M. Horn, H-O-R-N-E.
Lloyd M. Horn. Where does he live?
He lives here in the city.
Was he older?
Younger.
He was a younger brother. Okay. Could you tell us something about your home life? Where did you live when you were a kid?
We lived in East Liberty. I was born in the same house we lived in until I moved out and got married. It was on Chisholm Street in East Liberty. And we had a very warm family life, and our parents were leaders, and they brought us along. As a matter of fact, my dad was very active in the Boy Scouts. My mother was very active in PTA and sisterhood and DASA and council and so forth. They were real role models for us.
You were really a community-minded family.
Yes, sir. We were.
Okay. In your background, in your family, your grandparents, did your grandparents live in Pittsburgh?
Yes, they did. My grandmother was born in England, and my grandfather was born in Russia, as I was told.
Mm-hmm. And they were married where?
In Pittsburgh.
In Pittsburgh.
Yes, they met in Pittsburgh and were married in Pittsburgh.
Could you tell us something about your childhood life? For instance, what was your religious orientation? What was the economic situation?
Well, we were when I was real young, it was during the Depression, and my dad had the sole responsibility of supporting his mother because his father had died at the age of 11 of peritonitis. And at that time, my dad decided he was going to be a physician. He was 11 years old. He said if he could have saved his father's life, he would have. So all the family pulled their resources so that Daddy could go through Pitt Medical School. And in order to also help himself to go through school, he was the editor of the Pitt Orbit. I don't know exactly what it was called.
Pitt News?
Pitt News, I see. That would be it. And my mother, as I said, was a graduate of PCW, which is now Chatham College. She was married shortly after she graduated, so of course she never really worked. She became, when we became old enough to go to school, Mother became extremely involved in the PTA, and we were always involved in the Israel congregation. My mother was a sisterhood president there. My dad led the Boy Scouts. I was very active in the religious school. I was a valedictorian of my confirmation class. I was president of the Alumni Association there. So I was always encouraged by my family, and I role models because of what they did. My mother was extremely active in burning the mortgage at the mayor's when they built the addition to the building. I forget that movie.
How did you observe? So you were, would you say you were conservative?
We were conservative. We weren't ultra-Orthodox. We weren't Orthodox, but we observed all the holidays. And we were always proud of what our religion was. We never hid it.
Did you keep a kosher? Did your mother keep a kosher home?
It was kosher until the last few years of her life. After that, it became just general.
General, okay. And you say you had a warm family life. Were there other, did you have family?
Yeah, my mother was very close to her sister and her two children. Her sister was Florence Finkel, who also was very active. Well, she was a member of council. I don't know how active she was. She wasn't as organization-minded. My mother had a brother, L.J. Marks, who inherited the jewelry business, and we had four children. And we all celebrated all the holidays together, both Thanksgiving and Passover, holidays, breaking fast food, and getting, we always did everything together.
So you were lucky.
Yeah.
Tell me about school. Where did you go to school?
I went to Rogers School, which is still in existence. I went to high school at Peabody, and I went to then PCW, now known as Chatham College. I did do some graduate work at the University of Pittsburgh, but I never finished the work for my master's degree. When I was out of school, I was one of the very lucky ones in my class. I graduated in 1943, and I immediately obtained a position at Mellon Institute as a research assistant for a fellowship which was funded by the Pittsburgh Des Moines State
Did you know a man there named Robert Bowman? Bob Bowman?
I don't remember that name, but I remember the Jackson family. There was J.O. Jackson, and there was his brother, I think, was John Jackson. That family, those were the ones. We worked on a research fellowship.
Mm-hmm. So you worked at Mellon Institute?
Yes, I did.
That's terrific. That's a terrific place. I've learned a lot about it, and it's a very fine place.
Yes, I enjoyed those 4.5 years very much. When I was there, I became acquainted with one of the research fellows whose name was James H. Veltman. He was a Dutchman, and he came to this country, and he became the Dutch consul for the city of Pittsburgh. And I was always very ambitious, so in addition to working at the Mellon Institute, I did secretarial work for the consul. Eventually, Mr. Veltman went into his own importing and exporting business, and I worked directly with him at that time.
Did you leave Mellon Institute to do that?
Yes, I left Mellon Institute to do that. And with Mr. Veltman was a Dr. Hill, who was also a chemist. And I got to be even more interested in chemistry than I was when I worked as a research assistant, because really, as a research assistant, I did a great deal of studying, looking up the history of the different projects and the different metals and so on that they were working on. Eventually, as I said, Mr. Veltman went into his own importing and exporting business, and I ran the Pittsburgh office, and he had a farm in New Jersey. I just can't remember the name of the city of New Jersey where he imported Dutch bulbs and all their sort of flowers. And he was there, and of course I ran the Pittsburgh office. When I ran the Pittsburgh office, he shared his office with an attorney, Edward A. Schultz.
Edward A.
Schultz. He was not Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
He was a football hero that worked with John Sutton. And of course, that being the case, we had quite a nice practice because the people, remember chalk and were being a job. And at that time, I got an awful lot of legal training because he became an assistant district attorney, and he had to take some night courses so that I would be able to write his briefs and, chip things.
Sound as if you were a sponge. I just
absorbed all that.
Absorbed all kinds of information.
And I tell you, I find all that training extremely helpful, having been in this business with us.
Knowledge is power.
That's right.
What did you study in college? Did you study science?
My major was modern history,
okay.
And that's where I got my ability for research, library work, and that's what my value when I first went to Mellon Institute. Incidentally, my boss at Mellon Institute was a Dr. James B. Garner. He was the one that came with the gas mask for the First World War.
Really?
Yes.
He was at Mellon Institute.
He was at Mellon Institute. Well, he had retired, and he didn't like retiring, just like I don't like retiring. And that's why he headed this fellowship from the Pittsburgh Dominion Steel Company. They were the company that designed storage tanks for liquefied natural gas. And, you know, that had to endure very, very cold temperatures.
Where did you go?
Excuse me, just a minute.
That had to endure very cold temperatures.
Well, they had to develop metals that could endure very cold temperatures. My first day at work, I met Dr. Brown. That night was a tremendous explosion of a liquefied natural gas plant in Cleveland, Ohio. And I never saw him or his assistants for the next 6 weeks. We had telephone conversations, and he'd say, Miss Horowitz, would you go up and look this up in the or would you look this up in the library? Would you look this up in the library? So I really, on my first job, got indoctrinated very fast. And he complimented me that the methods I had learned from research, and I had learned those from my major history professor. She was Dr. Anna L. Evans. She was extremely wonderful in teaching you how to dig out information in library books and how to follow up references. And they found this extremely helpful and worked with them. And incidentally, I kept in touch with Dr. Garner until his death. He was a fine man. He was up in his 90s. And he had 11 children. And for many years after that, I heard from several of his children.
Well, what did you do at Mellon Institute? Then you weren't working in a lab.
No, I did not work in a lab. I did the research, the library research. I don't know what else you would call it. And then I would write up the reports. I learned to type, and I typed the reports, and I read other reports, and what I would do, you know, I would highlight parts that the research people should read that would be effective and would help them.
So you kept them current with
yes.
the, and also gave them the background information.
At that time, Dr. William A. Hammer was an assistant director of the Mellon Institute, and I don't know, he ran a clipping service, I swear. He read every newspaper that ever came out, every magazine, and I learned so much from him. Many of the techniques that he used, I still use here in my business. He would read the journals. He would pass up this to this man and this to that one and something to somebody else, which it becomes extremely helpful.
That right, so he would just say very current.
Very current, and he was a very interesting man. He left, at Mellon Institute, he would get a 1 month vacation, and every year for his month's vacation, he would take a bus trip. He would get on a Greyhound bus, and he would head for different places, and he said what he learned from talking to people, you know, just driving the bus or seeing them at bus stations. And I find that extremely interesting. As a matter of fact, last week we were out for dinner, and the people sitting beside us, I never knew them from the man in the moon. We got to talking, and it turned out she was a psychiatrist, her husband was a chemist, and we've met twice since then. But, I mean, I find it very interesting to talk with people. I'm a people person.
I can see that you are. So you attended Peabody, PCW, and Rogers School.
Mm-hmm.
How about your religious education?
It was all within the years of college.
And you were confirmed?
I was confirmed, that's right.
How about bat mitzvah?
No, I was not
bat mitzvah.
They didn't have bat mitzvah. You know, many of the women today now are getting bat mitzvah someday when I'm not so tied down here at the office. I might at my age go through that. Yeah, I really miss not being able to read the
Bible. So do I. So do I, very much. Because it's been so much more of it in our service.
And there's so much more that you can get out of it. Some of these idioms you just can't translate.
That's right. Absolutely. Can you tell us what Pittsburgh was like when you were growing up? How was it to you? How did the city appear
well,
to you?
Well, to tell you the truth, when I grew up, I thought it was marvelous. I thought it was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And now when I see the changes in it, and I see the old pictures of what they tore down and what they built up, but, oh, I was very enthralled with
Pittsburgh.
I know that every year, two separate weeks, Daddy and Mother would take off and we'd go up to Northeast PA, which, as you know, on Lakeview. And we would always go the same weeks and we'd meet the same people up there. And they came from different cities, and I would always brag how wonderful my city was. It did this, and it did that, and it did the other thing. I was quite a baseball fan at that time. And, oh, they had Ladies' Day. I forget whether you went free or for a pittance of money, and I would always go to the Ladies' Day games if I possibly could and brag about my city. But, oh, I thought it was wonderful.
You didn't have, your family didn't struggle financially.
No. As I said, we weren't as luxuriously situated as we are now, but we never did without anything.
Okay.
Daddy paid my tuition for B'nai Israel full. We never asked for a subsidized membership. I paid my full tuition to then PCW. When I went to Pitt, because I belonged to Mellon Institute, I got my tuition free. But I mean, yeah, that
very
was
good. Okay, how did you, I'd like to hear something about your adolescent years, how you enjoyed, what kinds of things you did as a teenager.
I was very involved with all the activities that they had at the Israel, and I made all my friends there. And I'm sorry to say that two of my best friends have already passed away, but we had parties at each other's houses. We went to the movies together. And I remember at that time, we weren't ashamed. Our fathers would each take a turn taking us to the movie and taking us back from the movie. We'd go to Reimers and have a soda. You know, that was a big, big deal.
That's right.
And never forget, my allowance, I guess I must be my 12 or 13 years old, was 50 cents a week. That was a fortune. That was a fortune. And I saved up enough money to buy a blue leather purse at Mansman's.
That wonderful store in East.
Oh, that was a wonderful store. That was the worst thing in the world that went out of existence.
Right.
And I mean, these are just little highlights
right.
from my childhood that
right.
I remember. And all my friends were jealous of that beautiful blue leather purse that I had.
So that you, most of your social life centered around
the synagogue.
Mm-hmm.
And then these friends I made, you know, we went to different parties and we did different things together.
Uh-huh.
We would go skating. Remember there was Duquesne Gardens and they used to have the ice skating
right.
rink there. We
right.
used to go there ice skating.
Did you roller skate at Lexington Rink?
I don't think so.
No.
I was always afraid of roller skating. And I must tell you one other thing, I was always afraid of dogs. My grandmother lived at 746 North Negley Avenue. It was on a hot August day. She was sitting in the middle, and I had to get out of the car. I got out of the car, and this great big police dog, it was a hot day, jumped forward. And to this day, I'm deathly afraid of a dog, even if it's a little poodle.
I understand that.
Yeah, but there's just, you know, little things like that from
right.
your childhood that you
right.
remember.
They do. And your brother
is a pediatrician.
Yes. So he went to college.
Yeah, he went to school, but he hasn't been well, and that's why I had to take him.
Okay, could you tell us, now that we've got you out of school and working,
mm-hmm.
how about your courtship and marriage? Could you tell us something about that in your life?
Well, I met my husband on a blind date. A very good, I'll tell you about something else from my teenage. When I was in college, there was what was called the College Student Council at the YMWHA,
mm-hmm.
and I was an officer in that. I was very active in that. And that's where I met some people who to this day are still friends of mine. And it's through one of the gals I met there that she introduced me to my husband on a blind date. But I used to be a rather popular, I mean, Friday nights and Saturday nights I was always able to get out. But I met Seymour through Sarah Bell. I don't think we knew each other more than 4 or 5 months when we decided to get married.
Okay, and so could you tell us, so you met on a blind date. What did you do? Where did you go? Do you remember?
I don't remember.
Oh, and when were you married?
We were married.
What was the date?
Excuse
me,
1 minute. Would you turn this off?
Okay, we are.
Okay, so when were you married?
We were married in March of 1949.
Okay.
And we were married at B'nai Israel, Rabbi Lichter, the Marian rabbi with whom I was very friendly. My family was very friendly with Uncle Ben. As a matter of fact, we called him Uncle Ben. And we were married at B'nai Israel, and we went to New York.
Did you tell us something about Seymour?
Seymour is a businessman from beginning to end. I mean, his business sense has guided us to be as successful as we are in business. When we were married, we were in a bar food distributing business. We sold everything to the bars except the booze. I worked on the inside, and Seymour would go out and develop routes, and we'd sell the routes, and he'd go out and develop another route. We were in that business for 18 and a half years. And you know, there was not so much bookkeeping then. There were not so much record keeping. I was able to keep all the records and do the income tax and everything. Those 18 and a half years, something that is not possible today.
Sure, that's right.
That group is called Delicious Food Products. We're located down on Butler Street, and we, as I said, we lived up in Staten Heights, so it was very handy. After that, after Seymour retired and became, and while he was in that business, he also became a very successful mutual fund salesman. And when we retired, he became extremely involved in the stock market, which he still is. He does give us some time here and takes care of the banking and the finances when I got into a problem here, but he's very involved in the stock market. He's been, thank God, very successful.
Very good.
Yeah.
That's very nice.
Yeah.
I might ask him a few questions one day. Okay, so, and you helped him in business.
I helped him in business, and while I was in business, I was involved. I was president of the Hadassah Group. I was donor chairman. I was, I was a vice president of the Council of Jewish Women of the Sanctuary at the time. I was a vice president of the B'nai Israel Sisterhood. I was a vice president of Women's American Art. And I was also, besides being active in the group and in the chapter of Hadassah, I was active in the region of Hadassah. Our business was such that he opened at 6 in the morning, I got down there at 8, and I was there from 8 to 12, and we had an answering machine. After that, I was then able to get very involved in my organization.
That must be a high energy person.
Oh, yeah, I do have a lot of energy. I still do.
That's a gift.
But I started my, as a matter of fact, when we were first married, right after Alan was born, which was a year and a half after we were married, my mother made me a member of Hadassah and the B'nai Israel Sisterhood, and I was very active in that stream.
You immediately began to participate.
Yes,
you weren't
No, I wasn't. I was never just a
just
douchebag.
Just a douchebag.
No.
How about your children? How did you manage to,
I had
in view of today's...
I had an excellent housekeeper. Her name is Margaret Walker. She raised my kids. She got to work every day at 7:30 in the morning, whether it was rain, snow, sleep, whatever it is. She was wonderful. She was with me until 2 or 3 years ago when she never, you know, rather than able to go to work and wasn't able to come. She was wonderful.
So how long was she with you?
I'd say Margaret must have been with me for, I'd say a good 35 to 40 years, yes. And as a matter of fact, when Alan got married, Evan is married, he says, we have to have Margie Walker at the wedding. Margie Walker has to be there. She's part of my life.
Yes,
and,
I can see
and when
that.
She became getting, started to get so mixed up, the kids got so sorry. I hated to, but her children came and said to me, you know, Mother, I don't think she should be alone in the house anymore. Sometimes she forgets what she's doing. But she was wonderful. It was before they had so many good nannies.
Right, right. Well, you were very lucky to
I was
find
extremely
her.
Lucky.
It's a compliment to you both.
Oh, yeah, that we got along
That's
so many
right.
years. I mean,
right.
she was with all family celebrations when the kids were bar mitzvahs. She was there with us Thanksgiving. She was always there with us. And she wasn't there as a maid. She sat at the table. She did help me, but
mm-hmm.
she sat at the table. Just
she was
like
part
that.
Of the family.
That's right.
That's really neat. Let's see, your children... have you lived in the same house?
Yes, we have.
Do you have the address? Okay. And you have the children's birth dates. I think we got that, too.
No, I don't think we got that. Alan was
well,
born
yeah.
in 1950 and Evan in 1955.
Okay. How did you, in your own home, practice Judaism? Were you still a B'nai Israel conservative?
Yes. We did everything. And you know, then is something that I don't do now. Every Shabbos was a Shabbos with the chalei on the table. And dinner was a very important part of our family. When we were in the food business, if Seymour didn't get home until 6 o'clock, we didn't eat until 6 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
There was no eating in front of the television set.
Mm-hmm.
It was, and we had family discussions, and dinner was important.
Mm-hmm.
We always made
you
a special
deal.
Sat down
to and have dinner
yes.
as a family.
That's right.
Okay. And your boys, were they bar mitzvah?
Both boys were bar mitzvah. Yes, they were.
How about confirmed?
They were both confirmed. So they both practiced Judaism. They're both members of B'nai Israel. Unfortunately, B'nai Israel is closing their doors. It's a heartbreak to us.
Oh, how do you feel about that?
Very badly. Very badly. Very, very badly.
Oh, they're moving to Fox Chapel, aren't
well,
they?
Well, not exactly.
Yeah. Could you tell us about it?
My understanding was, and I promoted the new synagogue, and I promoted promoted it not just from the mouth out, but from the pocketbook too, that it was going to be called the Nayish or Beth Jane.
In Fox Channel.
Yeah. But a lot of young people who have had no experience,
right.
We're a new entity and we need a new name. And when the name became Adat Shalom, with the Nayish or Beth Jane, a little underneath, that's when we're going. I don't know where we're going to belong next year. My husband is very strong for remaining conservative and not becoming Reform. I was thinking, because I'm very fond of Rabbi Gibson and I work with him in the community and in projects, of going there. But Seymour says,
is that Temple Sinai?
Yeah. But Seymour says, you know, we like to observe the minyan on the day of the Yahrzeit, not all being together on Friday nights. So I'm still using the word, quote, shul shopping, unquote.
Mm-hmm. So you don't feel positive about the merger?
I do not feel positive at all, because young people are wonderful, and young people have fantastic ideas. But you know what? There's a foundation on which they have to build, and you can learn something from the people who build the foundation brick by brick by brick. And there is a large group of amazing people who are very, very upset about what they are. They think they'll get 30% of the membership.
Have you any idea how large the membership is?
The membership at the Nayish, well, at one time was 1,100 families.
I know, it was a very...
They were down to 400 members.
400 members, or 400 families.
400 families. And this year, when this all came about,
I see.
And they already made their other affiliations.
I see. Okay, and Beth Jacob, where did they come
Beth
from?
Jacob was from New Kensington.
I
and
see.
Beth Jacob was down to 40 members.
I
so
see.
Naturally, right after the high holidays, they closed down. And their fuss is, why shouldn't the Nayishwa close down? The Nayishwa can't close down because there's too large of a percentage of their families who are not going there.
I see.
First of all, it's easy to criticize. If I criticize out loud, they'll say it's because I was in the transportation business. When they were moving all the way up to Guys Run Road, they should have said, we will transport you older people here. Well, after the fact...
they were going to.
No.
They're not.
After
they're
the
not going to use your buses, huh?
No. After the fact,
yeah.
When everybody, many of these people have gone where their children are, and they went this year, you know, they might as well get in early. Now they think maybe they will. But the big discussion was, well, do you transport them for Friday night and Saturday, or just Friday night, or just for the high holiday?
Uh-huh.
I mean, such a discussion over a lot of foolishness. Now, I am a vice president of the Nayishwa Congregation, and I stood alone. I stood absolutely alone on the board when I said, fine, you want to go up to Fox Chapel? There's a great need for a synagogue up there, a great, great, great need. But then have a satellite in East End, because there are still people who will not go there.
There's still enough members
still
in East Liberty. I mean, it is.
Well, you know, Adith Jeshurun is leaving too. Adith Jeshurun
right,
is going to Monroe.
They're going to Monroeville.
Yeah. And they have some members who don't want to go to Monroe.
I'm saying you probably don't have young families per se, but you're not at the. I mean, there should have been a scaling down.
Absolutely.
There should have a rabbi should have come
yeah.
periodically. You know, I mean, there should have been
a people. The people
now
who
I
are
live in Fox Chapel, by the way, belong to Temple Sinai. Mm-hmm. Have no intention.
Well, the people who are of the age that are staying in East Liberty, they're the ones that dig into the pocket for support. We have an adult education series at the Nayishwa now. Each one is fighting when they can have it at their home, when they can have it at home. We have 20, 30, 40 people coming. We just met at Dr. Reese's home on Tuesday night. We had 40 people. And, I mean, this group wants to stay together.
Really
what's happening to my shore? Now, all the goodies from the Nayishwa are supposedly going up to that shore.
What do you mean, all the things from the synagogue itself?
They're going to move the stained glass windows
mm-hmm.
and rebuild.
Mm-hmm. Are they building a new building?
Eventually, they don't have the money right now. However, they got a good break. They bought this building, you know, from Harmerville Rehab.
Mm-hmm.
And Harmerville is leasing the lower two floors for 2 years.
Really?
And they will get $100,000 a year in rent, which, of course, will pay the mortgage payments.
Wait, Harmerville Rehab.
They
what did they buy?
Eventually, this is interesting. Originally it was a Divine Providence Academy. And when we first came into the transportation business, we transferred the kids from Pittsburgh up to
DPA.
Well, you know, the diocese is closing down schools, and that was one of the schools that they eliminated. Harmerville Rehab immediately bought the building, because at that time, Harmerville Rehab thought that they were going to expand real big on that area. But it turns out that you have to have satellites. So they had this building, and they were only using the lower floor of this building. So that's when they put it.
And they're going to lease it.
They're leasing that bottom two floors, which is a real boon.
So the synagogue will be on the upper floor.
That's right.
I see. And they're going to...
They're already there. They have the classrooms there. They have the preschool there. They have Friday night services. They have Saturday morning services. And Rabbi Dick, who was a rabbi at Beth Jacob in Kensington, is staying there until after the high holidays, and then he's retired.
I see. And they're going to refurbish that building.